Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tortoise. Hello, I'm Claudia, and you're listening to the Slow Newscast from Tortoise. Deep in a valley in the Alps, in the shadows of towering sheer cliffs, sits the village of Lauterbrunnen. Against a backdrop of snowy peaks, rows of chalets jut into the sky. Farmers sell cheese from huts on the roadside. Sheep roam soft green fields. Nearby, meadows burst with wildflowers. The occasional cow lumbers around, the alpine bells of its herd echoing in the distance. Frankly, it is everything you want from a Swiss village. But sleepy little Lauterbrunnen, with its population of just over 2,000, is actually much more hardcore than it looks.
Okay, ready, set, go!
It is a high-octane hub for people who want to fly.
Do you know why they come in our valley, in the Valley Lauterbrunnen? We have 13 jump-off positions, and that's all legal.
This is Karl Nepflin, the mayor of Lauterbrunnen. If our connection sounds a little shaky...
I'm not in my office, I'm on a mountain. 2,000 meters high at the moment.
This Swiss idyll is the perfect place to base jump. Now, for the uninitiated, base jumping is a sport similar to skydiving in that you jump and free fall, dropping closer and closer to Earth until you hopefully pull a parachute. Only instead of jumping from a helicopter or a plane, base jumpers launch themselves from fixed objects. Mountains, cranes, satellite masts, even the Chrysler Building in New York.
All right, 3, 2, 1, see ya!
Woo! Some wear specialised wingsuits that allow them to soar rather than just freefall. In Lauterbrunnen, you see them gliding, almost horizontally, their webbed arms outstretched like comically large flying squirrels. They hug perilously close to the contours of the valley, twisting and turning at speeds of up to 220 miles per hour. The people who do it tell me it's addictive.
It's going in a few seconds.
I can see why. It is the nearest you can get to actually flying. And even watching it is exhilarating, heart-in-mouth stuff.
Holy fuck. That must be the cool part, where you're just gliding.
Oh my word, I cannot believe I've just seen that.
So, for fans of the sport, the village of Lauterbrunnen is Disneyland.
In the last year, we had about 700 base jumpers in our valley. Different people from maybe 10, 15 different countries. And they made, all in all, between 25 and 30,000 jumps. Of course, that's, the big problem we have is all these accidents.
Accidents is one way to put it, because base jumping is the most extreme of all the extreme sports. You're sometimes travelling too fast, too close to the ground.
The journalists like you, they just like to know how many dead, you know. So the answer is between 3 and 5.
Is that 3 and 5 ever?
Every year.
Every year. Every.
That has earned Lauterbrunnen its grim nickname, the Valley of Death. And if Mayor Karl sounds a little cold, he says it's because this has become part of life in his village.
All those who do this hobby pass sooner or later through the valley. The older and more experienced they get, the more they risk to die.
This is Hans. That's not his real name. He lives in Lauterbrunnen and we spoke by email, so he's being voiced by an actor.
When one of our teachers retired, we celebrated in the schoolhouse. As it was good weather, everybody was outside on a patch of grass. Everybody who sat around a table could see how the base jumper in front of us hit the rock. The doctor and the mountain guide went afterwards to recover the remains by helicopter, and the mountain guide just sarcastically asked the doctor if he was sure that he was needed.
Locals have had to find ways to cope with their proximity to death. It hangs over the village. The noise of the wingsuits whistling through the air. The shouts of delight in earshot of homes and schools. The screams when it goes horribly wrong. The dents in the earth that betray the past impact sites.
It's worse when people work for a long time in the valley and you know them. We feel sorry for the parents.
One local tells me about a family that came home to find a jumper had crashed in their back garden. They laid flowers over the stains in the grass.
This is going to be epic.
Base jumping used to be a niche sport. It was underground, often illegal. But now it's gone global.
Kind of freaking out a little bit right now.
In Lauterbrunnen, last year was a peak of jumps and of deaths. Partly because base jumps are now caught on camera and shared with millions. And if there's one company that's really helped bring it into the mainstream over the past 40-odd years...
You guys ready for some big wall proximity flying? Yeah, here we go.
It's Red Bull.
Danger, obviously, is ever-present.
Because I'm going to let you in on a secret. Red Bull isn't just a drinks company. Sure, it makes energy drinks. It sold more than 12 billion of them last year.
Jam some really sweet two ways and four ways.
Really, Red Bull is a marketing giant. It makes millions by outsourcing the production of its drink. And then it spends an unusual proportion of its profits and corporate energy on self-mythologizing. It sells the idea of Red Bull. A home for the daring, the unconventional and the adventurous, rather than the drink itself. And it's done that almost since the first can was cracked open in Austria in 1987 through high adrenaline sports.
Brian's off the ramp.
Just put everything together and we just pulled off the sickest thing I've ever done on a wakeskate for sure.
Drone successfully.
You've probably seen the videos. Red Bull sponsored athletes kitted out in silver, red and blue, jumping, wakeboarding, BMXing and parachuting. Maybe all at once, throwing themselves off buildings, cliffs and mountains, breaking records. Sometimes breaking even more.
That was our goal. I wanted to be the first human outside of an aircraft breaking the sound barrier.
But there's a murkier side to all this. Red Bull glories in its association with stunts that appear to have a genuine risk of going catastrophically wrong. And sometimes they do.
They convince these guys to do certain jumps that are even more dangerous than they really should be.
At my count, at least 20 athletes have died on Red Bull's watch since 1999. Some were sponsored athletes who died in training, others taking part in or preparing for Red Bull events. 5 died filming Red Bull content, like adverts. Nearly half were in circumstances related to base jumping and wingsuit flying. 2 more people were just bystanders in a horrific plane crash caused by a failed stunt.
People in many instances are being hurt and killed because they know that if they don't continue pushing the limit like that, they may lose their corporate sponsorship.
What responsibility does a company have when it pays athletes to jump off cliffs? To risk their lives as a form of marketing because people, like me, are such a receptive audience? When a company benefits from the commodification of potential death, what should it do when the worst actually happens? Because it's the visceral threat of danger that makes sports like base jumping embody the Red Bull ethos of higher, faster, further, the dedication to pushing the limits. But how close to the edge can a company get before it starts to endorse and encourage activities that go too high, too fast, too far? And the question of moral culpability doesn't just apply to the professionals they sponsor. What about the people inspired by Red Bull to scale cliffs in tiny villages like Lauterbrunnen and leap off? Do the people who think that, hope that, they too have wings?
I think corporate sponsorship gives new jumpers entering the sport a distorted view of the sport.
People that see it seem to think, oh, wow, I want to do that. If something does go wrong and you don't have those instincts, you're likely to get hurt.
Does Red Bull have a responsibility to them? In this episode, I jump into the adrenaline-fueled world of extreme sports sponsorship, a world riddled with complicated moral questions that Red Bull has made a point of avoiding. One of the very first athletes Red Bull sponsored was the Austrian daredevil Felix Baumgartner. In the 1990s, before most people had even heard of the sport, he was breaking base jumping world records.
Okay, ich sitze hier herum auf dem Christus mit in Rio de Janeiro in Brasilien.
Like the time he clambered, Red Bull logo emblazoned across his chest, all the way up and onto the fingertips of Christ the Redeemer in Rio. He peers down to the ground and steps off, free-falling for just a moment before pulling his parachute with 1 second to spare. The parachute was also Red Bull branded, of course.
Hey, I love you, man.
It broke the world record, the lowest ever base jump. What better way is there to embody the motto, gives you wings? At the time, the company's own head of communications admitted it was extremely dangerous and called Felix Baumgartner the craziest base jumper in the world. Clearly, Red Bull decided the risk was worth it. Since then, the brand has expanded its impact on the world of sports with unprecedented speed and ambition. It sponsors hundreds of athletes around the world, from big wave surfers to skydivers, but also cricketers and rugby players. According to Bloomberg, Red Bull shelled out over 1 billion euros on athlete sponsorships in 2022. That's about a tenth of its global revenue. It has nearly 18,000 employees in 177 countries. It owns 5 football clubs, 2 Formula One teams. There is no other company like it. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Back in the 90s, its gang of rebellious athletes and its pool of content was still growing. The company's first North American athlete was a freestyle skier called Shane McConkie.
When Shane first got sponsored with Red Bull, it was, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how excited he was. It was the dream of his life.
This is Sherry McConkie, Shane's partner. We speak over Zoom from her house in Lake Tahoe, California, where she teaches yoga. It's 7 a.m. her time, but I get the impression she's already been up for hours.
The first time I saw him was in a club, like a tiny little town, but a place that we used to go to called Humphreys in Tar City. And he had this long hair, and he was in the dance floor. He had Tevas on, and I kind of was dorky at the time. And I was like, oh my God, who is this guy? He just had this, I don't know, there was something about him that was just electric.
Sherry and Shane started dating in 1999. By that time, Shane was a professional skier, winning really big competitions. But he was also famous for his charismatic appearances in extreme skiing films, jumping and flipping his way down mountains with the type of devil-may-care attitude and occasional lack of clothing that demands a smile.
Oh my God, that was such a rush. I was feeling that one, man. Holy crap.
Skiing by itself wasn't enough. Shane was also getting into base jumping.
Whew. Something really cool about getting scared. I don't know what. All right, Mitch, you ready?
That's a video of him from the year 2000. He's perched at the edge of a steep cliff in Lauterbrunnen, staring down at the houses and fields of the Valley of Death, hundreds of meters below, about to jump.
5, 4, 3. Ready, set, see ya.
Shane always wanted to fly. Like he just was obsessed with flying. I mean, he flew on his skis. He loved flying in airplanes. He loved flying in the air. He loved skydiving. And then base jumping came around.
And he was good at it. I've spoken to multiple people who say he was the best of the best.
It was an illegal sport, so they used to do it at night, and it would always be a hassle. You know, it would always be a 3-hour drive here or a 4-hour drive there. And, you know, they'd have to go at night and they'd climb these towers or they'd go up on trams or buildings. I used to go with Shane to the bridges that they used to jump off, and it was just a handful of people, and it was not a scene. They were just really cool people that love doing what they do, you know?
Sherry only base jumped 3 times. She tells me it was pretty scary. But for Shane, it became a passion.
This is a Shane McConkey Huck doll. They made these things back in the early 2000s, and there were a bunch of them, different extreme skiers at the time.
This is Tim Sohn. He's a journalist and correspondent for Outside, the adventure sports magazine. Shane actually taught Tim how to base jump in 2005 when he profiled another Red Bull athlete who was attempting to break the world record for the highest number of base jumps in 24 hours. What united a lot of the early Red Bull athletes across different sports was that they were always looking to evolve their skill or try the next new thing.
It created a real home for a lot of these athletes, and it created a real sense of belonging, a sense of being on a team, quote unquote, a sense of identity, and a level up in exposure. You know, if Red Bull's putting something out, it's going to get eyeballs on it.
And the eyeballs were there, not just because of Red Bull's company profile.
It was that sort of like mid-2000s when you started seeing, you know, a Red Bull sticker on a helmet was sort of a thing. And they just grew their media operation, Red Bull Media House, and grew this massive roster of talent and this massive archive of footage.
Sherry says that as Shane's sponsor, Red Bull facilitated his dreams. She compares it to being selected for the Olympics. He became a globally recognised pioneer of ski base, a professional at a sport that didn't even officially exist. Ski base, by the way, is exactly what it sounds like. Skiing straight off a cliff and free-falling before pulling a parachute, like that chase scene from The Spy Who Loved Me. Here's Tim Sohn again.
And a Red Bull sponsorship has always been kind of a real feather in your cap for anyone in a lot of these outdoor action sports. It's about being on the inside of this tribe. It's a very important...
From what I've heard, tribe seems about right. There's a star power that floats around Red Bull athletes. They're the cool kids. In the noughties, Shane McConkey and 11 of the other aerial athletes even started performing as a team, the Red Bull Air Force. But as a sport grew, the risks started becoming more obvious.
Shane had a really bad base jumping accident. We went up with a sketchy guy, and it was super windy up top. And I said to Shane, I'm like, it's obvious you cannot jump. And he was a little bit cocky. He got a little cocky at that time because people hadn't started dying. And he had a 180 opening, which means your parachute flipped around, and he slammed into the face of the chief. And his dad and stepmom was there, and we were watching. I cannot believe this, but he managed to grab onto a tree that was growing out of the cliff. And so after that, then things started getting like, oh shit, this sport is not, you know, a piece of cake, you know. But that's when Shane also started changing. He would walk away from base jumps. He would constantly like move away from situations that looked sketchy.
That was 2003. I've spoken to multiple people who say that, especially as he got older, Shane took safety really seriously. He was precise. The seemingly carefree character you saw on camera hid the studied risk assessments, the training and the planning that went into every supposedly reckless move. But with a sport like base, where things can go wrong in the blink of an eye, there's only so much you can protect against.
When people started to die, Shane definitely was starting to get way more cautious of what he did with base jumping, but I guess not cautious enough.
In January 2009, Shane and his fellow Red Bull athlete and close friend JT Holmes pitched a series of new ideas to Red Bull and a production company. They wanted to film three different ski base stunts in the Dolomites. In March, the pair flew out to Italy. Sherry stayed in the States with their daughter, Ayla.
I got a call and JT and Shane would share a number, an international number, that was before FaceTime. And JT called and I said, you know, I answered the phone. I'm like, hey, JT, what's up? And he just blurted out, Shane's dead. And I was like, that's a horrible joke, JT. And he's like, no, he's dead. And JT clearly was in shock, and that was just... I was alone at the house with Ayla. Ayla was three at the time. And, oh, I can't even tell you how. I cannot even explain that feeling, like the chest closing and I screaming in my head. I didn't know what to do with Ayla. I couldn't function. And I just took Ayla and I got a little movie, Princess Movies on, and yeah, it's always at the back of your mind that, I was always at the back of my mind that Shane could die.
There's helmet cam footage of the moment Shane died. His skis had become entangled and stayed attached to him. He'd been able to fix the problem and get himself in a good position, but he'd run out of time for his parachute to work. He hit the ground, and he was killed instantly. Red Bull paid to fly his body home.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. UK business leaders are quietly confident that better times are coming. More than half of those who responded to the recent EY CEO Outlook survey believe their profitability would increase in 2024. As businesses look to the future, transformation is clearly front and centre on the 2024 CEO agenda, with the vast majority of leaders planning to maintain or accelerate their transformational change in 2024. With 76% of CEOs in agreement that AI will deliver transformative efficiency benefits to their organisation, how can AI be put to use to enhance innovation efforts? Find out how integrating AI into your business could minimise the negative impacts on the workforce, boost productivity, and improve overall employee experience by reading the full report at ey.com.
Whistler is in mourning tonight after the death of a superstar that many considered a hometown hero.
Shane's death made the news, as did Red Bull.
The company issued a statement. They said that Shane loved life and innovated both sport worlds he touched, skiing and base jumping. Unfortunately, the sport he pioneered also carries with it inherent risks.
Listening back to that statement now, it sounds a little flippant, doesn't it? It wasn't Shane alone who pioneered the sport. Red Bull sponsored him. It facilitated his ideas, benefited from the content he created and the risks he took. He died wearing a Red Bull branded helmet. The company made content about that too. Years later, it co-produced a successful documentary about his death. Sherry participated in the documentary, and she is clear that Red Bull took exceptionally good care of her when Shane died. But at the very least, you'd expect something as shocking as Shane's death to be a warning call. It raised serious questions about the risks of sponsoring sports like base, especially because just 5 months later, there was another base-related fatality. In August 2009, Red Bull Air Force member Eli Thompson died in Lauterbrunnen while making Human Flight 3D, a partly fictionalised film about wingsuit flying. The premise? In Red Bull's own words,
"Fly along as the best precision skydiving and base jumping team in the world are invited to raise the dangerous stakes and enter a wingsuit proximity flying competition, a sport that has already killed several colleagues and friends. An immediate uproar of protest from a member of their team and some of their families has them question their own sanity about pushing the limits and chasing their dreams."
And then, just 3 months after that, another longtime Red Bull athlete died from his injuries after filming a base jump for a Red Bull advert. For some companies, three deaths in under a year might have been the end of it. But not Red Bull. Months later, it announced it was working on the biggest jump of them all.
"The highest skydive ever. Free-falling at speeds that surpass 700 miles an hour."
Felix Baumgartner's 38-kilometre fall from space.
"Capsule check, are you ready?"
"Yes, sir, go ahead."
It's a step up from scaling Christ the Redeemer. The project cost $65 million, and it was watched live by an audience of 8 million. It was genius marketing, peak Red Bull, and glorious TV.
"Keep talking, Felix, keep talking. 3 minutes free fall, 3 minutes free fall."
12 years on, the video still feels like a sci-fi film. Wearing a spacesuit, staring down at Earth from a specially designed helium balloon, Felix Baumgartner takes a step and falls, disappearing into a dot as he becomes the first human to break the sound barrier unaided.
"Was that him breaking the..."
"Yeah."
Purists will say it was a skydive. Fair. But that month, October 2012, remains the peak of worldwide searches for base jump on Google. And what followed was a period of time that one person described to me as the bloodbath of base.
"There was about a 5+ year bubble that was kind of a dark time in the world of wingsuit base jumping in particular."
This is John DeVore.
Professional skydiver, base jumper, aerial athlete, and captain of the Red Bull Air Force team.
John DeVore is a big deal in the world of aerial sports. He's been front and center of Red Bull's Air Force for years. He wears his Red Bull cap while we video call. Like Sherry, he saw base jumping explode in real time. More and more people wanted to try what they'd seen in videos like Red Bull's, to fly. He says that came with a lot of problems.
"There's no governing body in the world of base jumping. So what that means is pretty much anyone, even if you're not even a skydiver, could figure out a way to buy gear and go to some place in Europe or America, you name it, and go hike up on a big cliff and jump. With very little to no experience. And all of us professionals would just scratch our head, try to convince everybody that's not the right path to take. You really need to put in time. But there's no way to stop people from doing it." So there was a wave of a lot of accidents, a very dark time in the sport where there was a lot of fatalities.
26 base jumpers died in 2014, compared to 15 in 2009 when Shane died. We know this because of the base fatality list, a surprisingly detailed database of every person who has died while base jumping. It includes their name, nationality, age, location, even the type of suit they were wearing and the type of jump they were doing. I see it as a manifestation of the sport's normalisation, acceptance of death. Shane McConkie was number 133. In 2016, according to the BFL, 37 people died, the highest on record. That is a lot of deaths for a growing but still small sport where most people know each other. Tim Soane, the journalist you heard from earlier, told me he felt like he was becoming an obituaries writer. Here's John DeVore from Red Bull's Air Force again.
There was a lot of negative attention, and sponsors just decided it was not worth it to be involved in.
Cliff Bar, the snack brand, pulled back from sponsoring 5 base jumpers and 3 soloist climbers in 2014, including world-famous athlete Dean Potter. In a statement, the company said,
"We concluded that these forms of the sport are pushing boundaries and taking the element of risk to a place where we as a company are no longer willing to go."
The decision was remarkable. And it still is, really, because it seemed like a tacit acknowledgement that a corporate sponsor held some responsibility for risk. But it was also controversial. There was uproar from some members of the extreme sports community who felt it wasn't Cliff Bar's role to decide what was or wasn't safe enough for them to do. But Cliff Bar stuck by its decision.
"We no longer feel good about benefiting from the amount of risk certain athletes are taking in areas of the sport where there's no margin for error, where there's no safety net."
A year later, Dean Potter, Cliff Bar's former athlete, died in a wingsuit accident. The relationship between athlete and sponsor is complicated, variable, and honestly, pretty secretive. John DeVore says that even members of the Red Bull Air Force have different contracts and arrangements. There's no one size fits all. But there's a theme in the conversations I've been having with sponsored athletes. They're contractors, not employees, even John. He was in an accident a few years back. It was bad. He nearly died and found himself in hospital for a long time.
"So what do you do now for life insurance?"
Well, I was a lucky one that I figured out. I have a financial advisor who's quite connected, and he had to go through 51 different brokers, and he finally found in a very creative way a way to get me life insurance. But in general, most all my teammates, most everybody I know, they don't have it. So it's just kind of that risk they take personally and in a family that they have to, you know, risk reward, I guess.
Can Red Bull provide it?
They tend to, the answer is they probably could provide it if they wanted to, but they don't. They very much try to separate the relationship when it comes to those things. We're not employees of Red Bull by any nature. You know, we're independent contractors, we're sponsored athletes. So we're not employees of them by any means. So they kind of stay separated in that. And it's probably smartest too, because, you know, there's already enough people chasing Red Bull for all kinds of legal things. They don't need to add us to it.
Instead, Red Bull has an impressive athlete performance centre fitted out with gyms, physios and medical professionals. It is an amazing resource for athletes. That's where John went to rehab after his accident. And he is overwhelmingly positive about the help he got there. But an academic study from a few years back, which flagged just how little scrutiny there is of extreme sports contracts generally, highlighted health, life and disability insurance as one of the key improvements sponsors, including Red Bull, should make to protect athletes better. Since the start of 2016, 8 athletes connected to Red Bull have died. One a year. Tom Aiello is a base jumping instructor.
"I think it on the people who are actually getting the corporate sponsorship creates a distorted set of incentives where they're trying to do things that are substantially more dangerous than they might otherwise do. and in many instances are being hurt and killed doing them, because they know that if they don't continue pushing the limit like that, they may lose their corporate sponsorship.
He told me he had two separate face-to-face conversations with Red Bull athletes about the pressure they felt to perform. Both of those athletes later died in Red Bull-related incidents. It's important to say, for that reason, we couldn't fact-check this claim, but we did put it to Red Bull. We haven't heard back. But not everyone who's dying is a professional athlete. What if what Tom said applies to the public too? Cliff Bar pulled back from sponsoring athletes because it was worried that it was putting them at risk. But it also flagged its responsibility to its audience to, quote, climbers, outdoor enthusiasts, as well as children, because of the activities it encouraged and endorsed via sponsorship. Companies like Red Bull have taken niche sports like base jumping and thrust them into the spotlight, professionalized them. And that has changed things.
And I write a personal note to everyone on the back of a 3x5 card whenever we issue a base jumper.
Rick Harrison is one of the OG base jumpers. He was doing it before the sport even had a name. And now he hands out the official accreditation. Well, as official as it gets in the base world.
We issue green plastic cards, like a credit card, that has a place they can write their blood type on it, a place for their signature, and then we put the date of their qualifying when they qualified for base.
It turns out BASE is actually an acronym of sorts. It stands for buildings, antennas, so radio masts, spans, aka bridges, and earth, or cliffs. You get an official base number when you've ticked each one off the list.
It used to be that we would get about, 30 or 40 a year. And now we're getting closer to 80 to 90 a year. But like I say, the last base number we just issued last night was to a fellow in Washington State. It was 2755.
Overall, base jumping now is much safer than it was when Rick started. Companies like Red Bull have undoubtedly contributed to that, as have technological advances and a blossoming ecosystem of base training schools. But Rick isn't sure that all the mainstream attention is positive.
I've been disappointed in issuing the numbers several times because we do get applicants that have zero or very few skydives. We actually got application by a couple here just a few years ago. About 3 years ago, though, a young couple married. She was 4 months pregnant when they finally made their qualifying jump off of a building. They jumped all the other three, and when they wrote us, and they bragged about that, never heard skydiving, my note to them wasn't very respectful. I said, you're really risking it. You don't understand. You don't have the instincts. If something does go wrong, you're going to get hurt or killed. And it was irresponsible for her to be jumping 4 months pregnant.
He says sometimes people are more focused on social media and content than they are on safety. He doesn't lay the blame directly at the feet of Red Bull. And it's clear there are countless other sponsors and companies involved in sports like this, like Monster, Red Bull's rival, or GoPro, whose cameras are strapped to the heads of athletes the world over. And who in 2016 signed a multi-year exclusivity contract with Red Bull. We approached them, but they did not respond to a request to comment. Rick does say he thinks that Red Bull has, at least partly, contributed to a reckless attitude towards base jumping. Other people I spoke to were more forceful, like base jumping teacher Tom Aiello.
I think corporate sponsorship gives new jumpers entering the sport a distorted view of the sport and gives them an odd set of incentives where they are trying to do things that may not be good for them or for the sport because they're hoping to achieve corporate sponsorship.
I put that to John, the Red Bull Air Force manager. It's clear throughout our interview that he's thought about this stuff a lot.
How do you respond to the people who say that Red Bull is encouraging people to take part or to copy those kind of behaviours, but without the same safety framework or training that you have at Red Bull?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's it's tricky because you can't reach out to everybody. You know, you can't respond to everything you see online. My goal is to always educate. It's kind of a balance, to be honest. I really like the idea that I'm inspiring the next generation, but it's also scary to know that somebody sees what you do, they go out and try it, they get hurt. And you might hear things like, oh, I mean, I saw the Red Bull guys do this and it's not so easy, or whatever the comment is.
In 1998, when Red Bull first sponsored Shane, one person was recorded on the base fatality list. I made a chart of the deaths, and you can see them climbing as the sport gets more popular. 8 people in the year 2000, 12 in 2002, 14 in 2007, 19 in 2012, all the way up to that peak I mentioned of 37 in 2016. After that, the numbers dip, temporarily, and then COVID sees a big drop in deaths. But today, the numbers are starting to climb back up. Last year was the deadliest year on record since 2018, 28 people. 3 more have died already this year. I'm recording this in March, peak season is summer. John says more people are dying simply because more people are base jumping. But the data I've got suggests it's not quite true. In Switzerland, for example, the home of Lauterbrunnen, death rates are also going back up year on year. Last year was the highest death rate since 2018. So, does a company like Red Bull have a responsibility to make sure its audience understands just how dangerous a sport like base jumping can be?
They're very much aware of the responsibility, but they kind of put that on us in the sense of it's our job to govern our own sport. It's not their job to govern a sport. They're there to support their athletes. And if we as athletes want to hold safety forums or seminars and things of that nature, they're going to be behind us 100%. But they're definitely not telling us to do something like that. It's up to us to really protect the sport.
I'm not sure I totally agree with John. Red Bull is a multi-billion dollar company. If it has the money to promote these sports, I think it has the money and responsibility to make sure its audience understands the risks. But I realise that John can't answer for Red Bull. He's the manager of one of their most renowned teams, but he's ultimately a contractor, like all the other athletes. So I put all of this to Red Bull, the real Red Bull with its HQ in Salzburg. Or at least, I tried to. The company is famously tight-lipped. It doesn't respond to any of my requests to talk, on or off record. Its media chatbot declines and closes my requests for data and interviews. Press contacts that athletes share with me don't reply. We end up hand-delivering a letter to its London HQ, which they haven't acknowledged at the time of recording. It's pretty baffling for a company of that size.
Ground looks good. Let's go with some smoke. You ready?
Over the years, Red Bull has maintained its line that athletes are ultimately responsible for what they do, and the extreme sports it sponsors are by their nature dangerous. It says it helps pioneers push their limits. And when things do go wrong, it distances itself.
Coming down.
Brake coming down.
Two,
in 3, 2, 1. Brake.
In 2022, 2 members of John's team, the Red Bull Air Force, were involved in a highly promoted plane stunt gone wrong.
Turns out that the pilots performed that mid-air plane swap despite the fact that they didn't have permission from the FAA.
The US Federal Aviation Administration eventually revoked their licenses. One of the pilots took the blame entirely. Red Bull gave little further comment, implying it had nothing to do with the lack of permission, something a former senior employee told me was inconceivable. In a statement, the company referred to its long-term contracted athlete as simply a friend. This is characteristic of Red Bull, an effort to distance itself from the criticism and a refusal to engage in questions about its responsibilities. I found that a lot of people who work in the extreme sports world don't want to talk about this stuff either.
For some, that's because they have nothing bad to say about a company that has brought more attention, more money and innovation to a market that was once a niche and has done it all with passion and precision. For others, it's because the company is simply too big in this space to criticise, even if you want to. Tom Aiello, the base jumping teacher, isn't surprised by that.
If you're what I would describe as a professional, meaning somebody who makes their living from this, if you're a professional working in base jumping, that means that you have no incentive to take a risk and speak out about these things because there is no positive to you. And there is potentially a large negative if you get into this conflict that then affects your business cash flow, right?
That's the type of risk even extreme athletes balk at. I believe Sherry McConkie when she says her contacts at Red Bull are like a family. She is undeniably, fully, thoroughly supportive of them. So I ask her what she thinks about people who say Red Bull is profiting off the escalating risks other people are taking. People like her partner, Shane.
Well, to me, that's a hard question because, you know, no matter what way I point it, it's going to be criticized. But Red Bull sells Red Bull. That's how they make their money. Red Bull drink, you know. And with that, they make videos of these incredible people that are athletes that do the things they want to do. So I don't feel like they're profiting off that.
Do you think there's a risk or a possibility that some athletes are going to feel like they need to go further and further to try to be the ones standing out?
Yeah, it's a hard subject, and I don't know if I believe in that. I really don't. I think for me, for Shane, I can't look at the rest of the world and say that, but for me, for Shane, they made his dreams come true. And yes, I know he died doing his ski base jump, but it was due to an error with his binding. It wasn't because of Red Bull. He was going to ski base jump no matter what, whether Red Bull sponsored him or not, you know.
Sherry is clear. She would have never asked or expected Shane to stop jumping. But like many of the people I've spoken to, she's glad her daughter doesn't do it.
I understand base jumpers. I understand why they want to fly. It's amazing. And they know the risk because it's so obvious that so many people are dying, you know? And you can't tell them no because it's just hard. Yeah, I think, God, Ayla's not a base jumper. I would not like that.
I keep coming back to that statement from Cliff Bar from a decade ago. We no longer feel good about benefiting from the amount of risk certain athletes are taking in areas of the sport where there is no margin for error. They didn't feel comfortable sponsoring an athlete to do a sport like base jumping, in part because they didn't want to take on the responsibility of encouraging more people to follow suit. Clearly, Red Bull is more comfortable with that prospect. A willingness to push the limits of possibility has been a central tenet of the company since its inception. It can't look away. It's been the very foundation of its success. Success, which is determined by the sale of cans. Because whatever they say, however dedicated they are to developing talent and innovating new sports, that is what the company is ultimately about. Can is king, one former employee told me. To sell those cans, the company asks some of its athletes to dance on the edge of risk. And it grants them the silver and blue helmet, builds them the wings to enable them to leap off and soar, their expectant audience watching with bated breath. The problem is that once they're flying, they're on their own. And it's the athlete, not Red Bull, not the viewer, who pays the ultimate price if their flight path ends up too close to the sun. This story was reported by me, Claudia Williams.
It was produced by Patricia Clark. The sound design was by Dominic DeLarghi and artwork by John Hill. The editors were Kerry Thomas and Matt Russell. Tortoise.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. UK business leaders are quietly confident that better times are coming. More than half of those who responded to the recent EY CEO Outlook survey believe their profitability would increase in 2024. As businesses look to the future, transformation is clearly front and centre on the 2024 CEO agenda, with the vast majority of leaders planning to maintain or accelerate their transformational change in 2024. With 76% of CEOs in agreement that AI will deliver transformative efficiency benefits to their organisation, how can AI be put to use to enhance innovation efforts? Find out how integrating AI into your business could minimise the negative impacts on the workforce, boost productivity, and improve overall employee experience by reading the full report at ey.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.